So we're going to continue our ninja history taking skills with taking a look at what medications they're on and what supplements they're on. So before we begin, let's just make sure that you're aware that any of the information I'm presenting here is not intended to replace a one-on-one relationship with a qualified healthcare professional, and it's also not medical advice. And when you're presenting to your clients, you need to be really careful and make sure that they are aware that what you're presenting and what I'm presenting here today is intended as a sharing of my knowledge, information, clinical research, and clinical experience over many years. I encourage you, and you should encourage your clients, to make their own healthcare decisions based upon your research and in partnership with a qualified healthcare professional. This is especially true for folks who are on any medications. I want to make sure that the things that we talk about in terms of nutrition are not going to interfere with the protocols. This is really important to understand exactly what medications, what supplements they're taking for several reasons. One, you want to find out what interactions might be happening between the medications, the herbs, the foods, or between one medication and another. You want to find out what kind of side effects might be possible with these medications and or supplements or herbs so that you can see if maybe some of the complaints they have are actually medication or supplement side effects. So you want to look at what are they taking, how often are they taking them, what time of day they take them, how long have they been taking them? Is this something they've just been doing for the last few months or is it something they've been doing for a long time? You want to look at what their doses are, what brands for supplements in particular, but also for medications sometimes, because some of the generics may have some extra excipients or additives or food colorings or allergens. And then what was the initial reason they started taking this? Was it prescribed by a doctor for a specific purpose? Was it something they started taking on their own because they read about it? So when we talk medications, we're talking prescription stuff, of course, but also any over-the-counters. People tend to forget to tell you about the 3 or 4 ibuprofen they pop 2 or 3 times a week because of a headache or a recurrent shoulder pain or whatever. But because it's so habitual and so normal, they may not think that it's necessary to tell you. So it's really important for you to get at that information. Next, you want to ask them, if they've noticed any benefits, have they improved as a result of taking this particular medication? Have they had any side effects? Have there been any symptoms that have started to occur shortly after starting taking these medications or supplements? And if they stop them, do those particular symptoms go away? If they haven't tried that before on over-the-counter stuff and supplements, you can always advise them to try going a couple of days without and then reintroducing to see if those effects come back. If it's prescription, it's a little bit more tricky. You'll have to have them work with their doctor. Any recent past supplements, sometimes they'll come in to see you figuring you're going to tell them what they should take so they stop everything and they say they're not taking anything. Or they've just recently stopped taking something because it was having a particularly bad side effect, but they're not going to necessarily offer that information unless you specifically ask for it. And then you want to get a thorough past medication history. If a year ago they were taking high blood pressure medication and 6 months ago they were on an antibiotic or an anti-inflammatory, it's good to know these things because it fills in the gaps on what's been going on with this person and what kind of interventions have been taken. It's really interesting when you start to do more and more of these histories with people, how little they tell you and how much they forget until you actually ask them. So it's important to have the languaging correct. So let's take a look at our medication forms and spreadsheets. What I like to do is have people fill out a form that basically has several columns. It says the medication or supplement name. It has why they're taking it, their doses and their timing, and then when they started, when they stopped, and any noticeable changes with it. So let's have a look at this. So we have an Excel spreadsheet, and then we have a Word version and a PDF version. So you're welcome to use it. I personally prefer to use the Excel version. There's a number of reasons. One is that you can easily manipulate cells. You can move them around, change the spacing. It can get very wide and expansive. And then when you print it, if you want to print it, you can actually shrink it down to a single page. And also because I like to keep these little extra tabs at the bottom. So you can put multiple worksheets within a spreadsheet. So if you have an old supplement sheet, you can keep track of it. You know, you're not working anymore, not the same medication sheet anymore, whatever. You can save that and start a new one, or you can put other things that are supportive information in another part of the worksheet. So this is our medication sheet. This is our supplement sheet. And I also include, when I keep track with my clients and patients, I like to keep a diet diary within there. Not everybody fills out this particular form for diet diary. Some have their own personal favorites. But if they do, I like to keep track of it right within the same spreadsheet. And then I can have these named and labeled. So diet diary, January 1st, diet diary starting February 1st, diet diary. So you can label them. Same thing with the supplements if they are changing that much, and the medications. So let's have a look at the columns. The columns for the medications and supplements are fairly similar. Name the medications you currently take or have taken over the past several months. Why do you take it? What's the dosage and the timing? You know, 500 milligram capsules three times a day. Or one capsule, 500 milligrams, first thing in the morning or last thing at night. So you want them to specify that. If they don't, when they're filling this out, then you go ahead and verify and ask them. You want to know when they started it. And it's approximate is fine because they don't necessarily remember the date they started and if it's been several years. But you want to know if it's a year, 3 years, 5 years, 10 years, or just 2 months. So approximate date it was started. If they've recently stopped it, or while you're working with them, they stop it, you want them to keep track of the date that they stopped it. And then any reactions, positive or negative. I took this and the next day I felt like I was run over by a truck. Or I took this and I finally got my first good night's sleep in a long time. So you want to have them jot those things down. For the supplements, I believe it's exactly almost the same. I'm a little bit more specific, dose and form, i.e. 3 drops, 1 500 milligram tablet, etc. Frequency and timing, and the same thing, date started, date stop, and any reactions. What I like to do is keep track of what they're currently on, and I'll have that at the top of the spreadsheet. So say these are what they're currently on. If we take them off of a particular supplement, I don't remove it from the chart. I just create a section called the supplements that we stopped and any other kinds of things that we do. We may temporarily stop something, so I'll put that in a separate section. And that's why it's really easy to just grab these and copy and paste them down below. So if we have a list of the stuff we stopped, so that a way I explain it to them is that if in a couple of years, you're kind of going through your supplements and you hear about this great new supplement, you check your old supplement list, you go, yeah, I heard about this great new supplement 2 years ago. I took it and I got a headache from it. So I'm not going to try this. So it just gives you a sense of keeping track. And I like to empower people to be in charge of their own health and to keep track of all the different things they're doing for that benefit their health. And also the things they might be doing that are not benefiting their health. So you can get very sophisticated with the medications, and you can make it easier on people if you give them a list. So what I've done with this one, or actually I got this one from a colleague, is there's the listing of antibiotic use. How often have you used it? And we know from knowledge of digestion that it's really important to understand the role of antibiotics in affecting gut flora and affecting your overall health. So how often have they taken them? And we mark that down. How often have they taken steroids? Because similarly to antibiotics, they have some pretty severe effects. And then I have a list of various medications here, and they can click off any of them that they've taken over the last month. So this is a more recent history kind of thing. And you can do both. It just feel out your person. You can always ask them these questions and have this, like I said earlier, with the exercise form. You may not want to give them the form, but you've got it as a cheat sheet for yourself, so you don't forget to ask. So when you're working on the medications, you only be ever taking these, and that. You know, antibiotics, laxatives, thyroid medication, etc. You can ask them specifically. And then any allergies they've had to medications or supplements and even foods would be good to list there. And then there's another place for a log and supplement, which is the same sort of thing as the other one. But this just gives you a little bit of extra information. Okay, and you have a PDF version as well, because that way you don't have to, if you don't have Word, it's no problem. Next, let's take a look at the environment and how their environment influences their health. The environment is a huge component of the stress on a person's body and subsequently the kinds of symptoms that they can manifest. You can overstress your detoxification mechanisms, not be able to cleanse and detoxify from the environment, and have a lot of health issues as a result. So we're going to look at their inside environment. We're going to look at their outside environment. We're going to look at their workplace environment. So let's have a look. So the online forum is basically asking them questions about their environment, their workplace. So how many hours do you work in an office building? Because office buildings are known to be toxic. There's toxic air from lots of different things. And are the lights fluorescent? Some people are especially sensitive to fluorescent light, but fluorescent light is not the best for your brain. To use fluorescent lights at home, they tend to flicker and they can cause headaches and they can cause a lot of other kinds of issues. How much time do you spend in front of a computer, right? They're getting EMF exposure. How far away do they sit? You may want to ask them as well. Do they live or work near high power lines? Does their job require the use of chemicals or pesticides? Someone who may work in a nursery, for example, may be required to handle some of the fertilizers. Somebody who is an art teacher might be exposed to a lot of the chemicals in the clays or the paints that they use. I always ask them about their use of chemical fertilizers at home, and do they store those, and are they exposed to those? I ask them about microwave use. How often do they use a microwave? You know, using a microwave every once a month is not a big deal necessarily, but when they use it constantly every day for their food heating, it really destroys and damages the insides of the food. I ask them how much time do they spend watching TV? Again, it's the EMFs and it's also the jittery brain waves that occur. It's known that children that watch a lot of TV will end up with attention issues and focus issues as a result of just the constant moving and stimulation to the brain. How much time do they spend in their car? A lot of people are very sensitive to the gasoline fumes. I know people who actually carry a little mask in them when they go to fill up their car with gasoline. And if they immediately turn their car off, even if they're waiting for somebody to come in, because the exhaust fumes get back in. Probably good for all of us to do that, especially if they're really sensitive to that. Then we ask about habits like smoking, and did they ever smoke? Are they sensitive to smoke? Are they sensitive to automobile fumes? We always want to know what kind of reactions they have. Do they have a flare-up of symptoms in shopping malls? And in shopping malls, you're surrounded by all kinds of synthetic-type chemicals and preservatives, formaldehyde in the carpet and the various kind of VOCs in the paints. So that's a tip-off as to that their problem is an environmental problem and may have to do with their detoxification mechanisms. And maybe the liver is where you want to be looking. Same thing with chemicals in the cleaning solutions and perfumes. Are their symptoms worse at a particular time of year? And if so, when is that? That could have to do with environmental allergens that come out. If there's specific rooms in their house, every time I go in my bedroom, I start to sneeze. Well, maybe there's some mold growing in the bedroom, or maybe it's the new carpeting that was put in that's outgassing. Maybe it's some paint in there, maybe some other things that are being kept in there. It could be even clothing. Sometimes if you get polyester clothing, it has this just radiates out this particular chemical smell and not good for you. Is your home carpeted? And carpeting is important because if it's carpeted, they may be exposed to lots of molds. And mold is it's very aggravating to the immune system. Remember when we first moved into this house, my son was, we're real little, but he started to develop, maybe when he was 2 or 3, he started to develop this postnasal drip. We're like, what is this about? What's going on? And we started investigating. And I got some mold plates and I placed them in the room to see. And it, sure enough, there was a lot of mold. So we ended up tearing out the carpet and putting in bamboo as the flooring. And he never had the problem again. It was quite amazing. So these simple things like that, you can have mold growing behind your refrigerator. And that could be putting a taxing load on the immune system. So these are all really important questions to ask them, whether you do it with a questionnaire like this or whether you just talk to them about it. Important to do. If you're the type that just likes to talk to people and get this information out, you can have your forms in front of you to just remind you of all the questions that you want to ask and do your history that way. The point is not how you do it, but that you do it and that you be very, very in-depth in trying to dig. Because remember, some of these people have been around the block a few times and they've been to many practitioners and they're trying to get somebody that's going to really listen and dig to find those clues that nobody else has. Pets are another issue. If they have pets, that they could be allergic to the dander in the pets. Certain times of year, the pets may shed more than others. And that may contribute to the seasonal type problem. So you want to also ask, did their health issues come on after a particular incident, like travel or moving to a home, death in the family, toxic exposure on the job? This is really important to know. And then I have a table of products they use and whether or not it's organic, natural, or commercial. So we look at all the different things that they might be exposed to, their deodorant, their antiperspirants, you know, aluminum and antiperspirants, not a good idea. Some of the chemicals in the deodorants that you're putting in, clogging up your pores, your sweat glands, where toxins are supposed to be eliminated. A lot of people use various powders and hair gels and moisturizers on their skin. And the rule of thumb is if you can't eat it, don't put it on your skin. So you want to find out what those things are because the buildup of toxic exposure can be contributing to their health issues. Same thing with their personal care like shampoo and conditioners and soaps and shaving cream. Laundry soap is another one, and you may have kids that develop rashes on certain parts of their body. You really want to investigate the laundry soap and look for things like, and encourage them to switch to things like the seventh generation or the hypoallergenic types of things. Glue. Some people actually use a lot of glue, and they may not tell you about this, and it could be that they're sniffing the fumes from the glue. Maybe that's part of their work or part of their hobby, that they're a carpenter and they make a lot of little fine things and they use a lot of that really heavy-duty glue. Solvents, same thing. You know, if they're into something where they have to be cleaning up the residues of oil-based product, like, for example, oil paints, you need specific solvents to break that down. And if they're not careful about putting gloves on and protecting their hands. So these are all things that you can find out from them just by asking a question or giving them a questionnaire to fill out. Paints, varnishes, bleach, insect sprays, air fresheners, and gasoline. So these are all things you can ask. And on the personal care products, you may be asking them, well, what kinds of brands are you using? Are they using more natural brands like Aubrey's and Burt's Bees and things like that? Are they using the Clairols and the commercial stuff that's loaded with fragrances and all sorts of chemicals that may not be serving them? So let's take a look at our word version, a little bit different, but similar. There are tens of thousands of chemicals that are commercially produced in the United States alone, and the long-term use of these hasn't been studied. So we really want to look at what is your client or patient's toxic exposure. And let's take a look at this. We want to look at what their toxic load is so we know how to help them to avoid the toxic load and then how to work with them within their systems, within their detoxification systems to improve that. So electromagnetic factors. This is important. If they live close to high power lines, if they have the bed too close to a main electrical current, like say you have the fuse boxes and it's outside on the wall outside your bedroom, there's too much electromagnetics being by you when you're in bed for 8 hours, hopefully a night. A fan directly over the bed, over your, at least the upper part of your body, not a good idea either because of the electromagnetics. If you have it towards the foot of the bed, it's much better. Having an alarm clock or radio too close, I keep mine about 3 feet away. Ask them about that. How far away is that? And just give them an idea of how far away they can put it. There's all sorts of other things. Electric blankets, water beds, being near TV transmitters. Waterbeds, because there's a heating element, and the same thing with the electric blankets, and then you're laying in this electromagnetic field. Working on a computer for longer than 6 hours a day is an electromagnetic stress on the body. without a screen shield, especially. You want to find out, do they live near all these different cellular towers, radio towers? How about the use of microwave ovens? I actually went around with a Gauss meter and stood in front of the microwave when it was on, and the thing went off the roof. But then again, it even goes high with the Vitamix. So when you turn on your blender to make your smoothie, step away because that step by electromagnetic force might not be good for you. Fluorescent lights, the same thing. So we want to look at their toxin exposure. And this, I like this particular form because it broke it down by specific types of chemicals. And it's surprising where you'll find some of these things, like trichloroethylene, TCE, copier machine printing shops, decaf coffee, correction fluid, rug cleaners. And then you've got disinfectants, carbonless paint, spot removers, cleaning supplies, metal degreasers, recreational painting. Like some of the paints are, there's particular colors, especially the reds tend to have more toxins in them. And then there's formaldehyde. You're shocked at how much formaldehyde is in your environment. Dry cleaning, polyester, spray starch, foam wall insulation, particle board, wallpaper that's been up in the last 2 years, foam cushions and mattresses. All of these things can be outgassing formaldehyde, right? So you ask them if they've had problems since moving into a particular home. That could be a clue that some of the environmental things are really key there. So these are all questions, carpets, waxes, paint, stucco, you can read them all. These are all things you want to find out about if they're exposed to for an exposure to formaldehyde. And then there's a list of all the things where you can find pesticides. There's the obvious places, but also tap water, non-organic meats, things like that, fumigants, VOCs, which are in the paints in your walls. So if you've had your paint room home painted, if they have, in the past 2 years, although now you can get no VOC paint, even at the local stores like Home Depot. And I did that and repainted my office. And it was amazing how quickly the smell just dissipated within 2 hours. So there's all sorts of things, propane, barbecuing, laser printers, all sorts of things that give off VOCs. So you want to ask them about this. This is a very detailed questionnaire. You may not want to go into this much detail with people unless you're really suspecting. You can ask the more general questions. But then if it's really a resistant case and you're really wondering about their overexposure in the environment or the fact that they are so environmentally sensitive, you want to just really get at it. I don't use this particular form per se just because it is so detailed. And it takes them a long time to fill it out. But still, it's a good thing to use. I use it when I have somebody who's environmentally sensitive. When I say I don't mean I don't use it. I mean I don't use it on everybody. But I get at the just different categories of exposures that they have through my other form. All right, so there's asbestos. Again, the brands of the different products. Latex. Some people are sensitive to it, but it also outgasses. Miscellaneous things exposed to molds. This goes on and on and on. Looking at the bedroom. So you get somebody who's really environmentally sensitive. These are all the questions you'd want to ask. And you may want to take a subset of this that's going to be what you ask for the average person that walks in the door. So back at our slide presentation, we'll just look at a summary of the environmental influences that are important. Their current exposures. Their past exposures. What's in their garage? Super important. What personal care products do they use? What home care products? What occupational exposures do they have? Any known chemical or environmental sensitivities already? So we looked at the environmental exposures forms and got an idea of the kinds of questions you could ask. This is the categories, and you may want to keep it simple and just ask them questions within the framework of this as a starting point, and then as you get more deeply with them and you feel like you need to, you can go into the depth of the questions. But I like to start with at least that online questionnaire. All right, well, that was it for medications and supplements and the environmental exposures.